Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, Dream Big listeners. I hope everyone's dreaming big today. I know I am, and I'm always excited to have people on my show. And I try to have people that have inspired me, and this next guest has inspired me as long as I've known her. She is considered, you know, you see those artists out there that, and music is just a great thing. And every musician I have respect for, obviously, just doing what they do. But there was always something extremely special and extraordinary about this next person that I'm going to bring on to my show. She had a presence. She always reminded me of a dove. She was elegant, graceful, but fierce all at the same time. Her writing is incredible, and her spirit is huge, and is just someone I always wanted to be around. And so I'd like to introduce you to Audra Kubat. Audra, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, Jill. I'm honored to be here with you.
It's great
Thank
to
you
have
for
you.
That lovely introduction.
Absolutely, absolutely. Excuse my voice, just struggling a little bit, but you know, we all get there sometimes with the Michigan colds. But so that's why we're going to let you do most of the talking today. So I want to talk to you about, you know, obviously your career, and we've all had those questions of what inspired you, what's kept you going, that kind of thing. But I am curious, you know, as a child, were you always influenced by music? Were you, you know, were you drawn to you know, instruments, or what, where did it start for you?
Well, I was, we had a piano house when I was growing up, and I was told when I was really young, like 2 or 3, I would sit at the piano, and I kind of have some vague memories of, and then I would just plunk out notes, and my mom and dad were always like, oh my gosh, she really is making up songs. And my parents worked really hard. We lived in Detroit, and they wanted me to experience a great school. So I went to Montessori with my first experience when I was in like preschool, and they put a glockenspiel in front of me, and I learned, you know, kind of to play a little bit. So I always feel like melody was there really early on. I always thought about melody and I could come up with melody. They did try to put me in music lessons at one point, and I totally rebelled because I was already, I felt like I was already playing things that were like, I was already building chords just from ear and playing more complicated stuff. And then like getting lessons was like, now you just have to play dong, 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 you know, and I was
and
like,
didn't it
no,
feel
I
like a little bit like a straitjacket? That's what I always felt like. I know. And I hate telling people not to take lessons, but I'm always like, when you have it by ear and it just comes naturally, it's like, it's almost like putting it in a box when you have to get lessons. So did you continue them though?
No, I rebelled and didn't take lessons. And in fact, like I kind of went away from music when I went to public schools after that. I got in trouble a lot because I was always like making sounds in the back of the classroom, like with my pencil. And like, so I kind of felt like I got shut down a little bit, and I turned, you know, just to other things. But I always wanted to sing, so I would practice singing. And my brother was like, be quiet, you can't sing, you're not a good singer. And so I didn't sing. And then one day I don't know where I was with some friends, and I was probably like 15, and I just was singing, and my one friend was like, wow, you really have a good voice, you should sing. And I was like, oh my God, nobody's ever told me that before. And they kind of turned it around a little bit. I was like, oh, well, singing was such a joy. You know, it's this instrument you have wherever you go, and I was always like humming. And so I just started thinking, well, maybe I can sing. And I already was writing poetry, so I started going to a little open mic, Gotham City Cafe, when it was on Woodward, like, years ago.
Loved that.
And I didn't play an instrument or anything. I just went up there and sang a James Taylor song that I knew. And then I had a couple other friends say, well, you should play an instrument. Why don't you play something? And I was like, well, okay. And I picked up the guitar and taught myself some chords. That's where it kind of kicked in.
And
the actual writing.
I think that's so encouraging because people think that some people put such a big pressure in front of actually learning to play guitar. You know, so many people say to me, oh, I wish I could play guitar. I said, you can. Anybody can play. You know, yeah. It just takes some practice and learning and just, you know, confidence. And eventually you just keep doing it like anything else. Did you feel that you enjoyed being on stage at that time?
I did. You know, I struggled a lot with like confidence when I was, you know, in middle school and high school, and I really wanted to be accepted and loved, and I did have, it's not like I didn't have friends, but I just felt, I didn't feel beautiful. I didn't feel like I, you know, I don't know. And I had this theater teacher in high school. This was like, I think like my junior year. And she gave me this opportunity. She, you know, she said she saw, you know, great things in me, and she gave me this opportunity to write a little play. And I did this play. And like, it was really exciting because I was on stage and I felt more confident than I ever felt when I was just kind of walking around in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about, at the time, I think it was theater, like being able to be somebody else. And like, my mom always says, like, fake it till you make it, you know? And it was kind of that feeling of like, I'm scared to do this, but I can pretend that I know how to do it. And that's kind of what I did. And even early on in my music career, it's like, I would be so terrified before I was going on stage. I'd be shaking and nervous. And sometimes I'd even get nauseous. But then there would be something right before I started that I'd be like, oh, just pretend that you know what you're, you know, just pretend you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a half a minute into a song, I would like start to lose myself in the song. It's funny because I would lose myself and there'd be these amazing moments, and you probably have the same thing, and a lot of artists do. It's like where you suddenly notice that you're losing yourself in the music, and then you're like, oh my God, wait. And then you're kind of like, oh wait, I got to get back to that place. So it's like, mm-hmm. I think getting better at always letting myself go back to that space where it's like, honor the song, be present in the song, and fully, fully in it. And then you won't be afraid because you'll be busy being fully in it, you know?
Well, and I think you stated it, and this is what I tell people a lot too, is I was similar in high school and, you know, not feeling like I belonged, even though people didn't, even my high school friends were like, oh, come on, I never felt that way about you. But I did. That's how I felt inside. And mm-hmm. I didn't do my music in high school because I was afraid it wouldn't be accepted. And you think all these years, you know, we wasted on not doing it. But but then being on stage, I always say that that's where I'm the most comfortable on stage. Mm-hmm. Than walking around on this planet. You know, there's just something about the bubble of the stage and the music, and that we have this, we're blessed with this opportunity to just kind of, I don't want to say escape, but you know, it's just, it removes you from earthly stuff, I think is the mm-hmm. best way to put it. I know watching you, you help me feel that I'm on stage when I watch you perform. And mm-hmm. you're so creative. Throughout your years, you've had such a presence in Detroit where you develop different things, the groups that you bring together, the women power that you bring together. It's so beautiful. What drives you to do that instead of just, you know, kind of focusing only on your material or something like that? Mm-hmm. What does it do for you to work with other women?
Well, first, I think... that it just really helps me stay grounded and feel like I'm connected to something. Like working with other people, and particularly working with women, has been just so empowering, I think, for all of the folks that I have worked with. When we come together, it's like two voices are better than one sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. or three voices, or I really appreciate sort of like the hip hop sort of attitude. When I look at artists in the hip hop world, I see so much collaboration. You know, you see a record come out and it's like featuring so and so, featuring this person, featuring that person. There really seems to be like sort of a camaraderie or sort of a sharing of that that form, you know, to to really highlight all of it, mm-hmm. you know? And so I really appreciate that. And I feel like for us, you know, it's like, we're struggling to get noticed, and we're struggling to, you know, get gigs and all that. It's like, when we put that energy together, it's like, there's just usually more support and attention towards it. And like, we're able to do like a bigger outreach, you know, and I always tend to and tell people, like, when they come together, it's like keeping your own name involved, and like being a solo artist that comes together for collaborations is like such a cool way to like sort of uplift the whole, you know. I want to see artists in our city, you know, succeed. And I think together and collaborating can like offer like new ideas we never would have thought of, you know. Like, I write a lot on my own, but when I come together and try to write with somebody else or work out harmonies or like parts and things like that, it's like, it just opens up a whole I never thought of, like, oh, what if I shifted that, gosh, I never thought of that, thank you. And same hopefully for them, that they feel that way. I was just playing last night, and a new artist I'd never heard, and she heard of me, and she was so nervous, I guess, that I was going to be playing, and she was playing, and she blew me away, really, really good. And one of the things that I was thinking about was like, man, it's like, we just need to continue to, you know, like, shepherd each other, you know. And not that I'm always the shepherd or other way around, like, but all of us have things to offer each other. And I just want to see that as like something, not only just in a musician's life, but like in the way that we collectivize like our pain and our joy, you know, when we put those things together, we realize like that we are, you know, a unit that can sort of move forward. Like, people want to localize the way they buy their beer and the way that they buy their greens and their, you know, artisan cheese. They want to trade, you know, brand. And it's like, well, that should translate into the artistry. And like, how do we sort of create a way that we are supporting each other? You know, we're not all going to be huge stars, you know, but we could be working artists. And I think through helping each other, like, we can have more success as working artists.
Well, what I feel it does too is watching it and viewing what you do is also a very subliminal message about how we should be on everyday life. You know, working together, building each other up, creating things together, not just in music, but in life. And I think that when people see your projects that you do, I think that gives, I don't know, it's just like hope. And I thoroughly enjoy it. And you also share so much of yourself with your nonprofit work. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I work with a couple nonprofits right now, Living Arts Detroit and Inside Out Literate Arts Project. And both of those entities help place real artists, working artists, into classrooms to do all kinds of, you know, to bring skills in different ways. I with Living Arts, I'm a wolf trap teaching artist, and I just finished a residency just today with my last day with this group. And I come in for 12-week residencies and help model for the pre-K teacher how to incorporate more music in their practice. So it's such a, like, rewarding work, you know. So not only am I connecting with these little ones, but trying to inspire them with music and using their voice and using dynamic and all kinds of musical elements to sort of instill and teach, you know, curriculum ideas. But I'm hopefully influencing a teacher, you know, that will go on and use some of these skills that I'm teaching them, like, over their career. And so it's really inspiring work. And with Inside Out, they put writers in the classroom. My dear friend David Blair, who passed away now, been quite a while. He started the first songwriting workshop with Inside Out, and so I worked with him a little bit after Inside Out had out to me probably about 7 years ago now, and said, will you continue the songwriting workshops? And so I'm one of the only teaching artists at Inside Out. There's one other one now that does specifically songwriting. So I'll work with like second and third graders. I often come in and say, I am a river. And if I'm using metaphor that day, they're like, you're not a river. And I'm like, but I could move like a river. I could nurture like a river, you know? And so I've kind of built this particular way to get to how do we use metaphor, even with like second graders. You know, it's like they, when you break it down in a certain way, they can understand. Well, I'm a river. If I'm a river, like, how do we make that sentence longer? Well, I'm a river that's twisting through this world. Okay, write it down. You know, and then together we like, you know, sort of cobble those together into a song. And by the end of the residency, like, we're then like working on a performance. And what I think is really exciting about that particular residency that I do with Inside Out is that it, not all those young people are going to be musicians, you know, but all of those young people will have to stand up and be in front of people and look people in the eye and practice those performance skills. And those skills, you know, those opportunities aren't in our schools as much as they used to be. And so we're doing a disservice if we don't give them these opportunities to stand in front of a classroom and say, hey, this is what I feel. Because mm-hmm. that will translate into their whole lives, you know, of being able to walk into that job and say, I'm the one that you want to hire.
Right.
You know, and this is why.
And people don't always think of that when they look at it as face value as just music or just teaching songwriting. They don't think of the bigger picture of it. And you're giving them the confidence. What drove you to start doing this? You know, how did you know you could do it? You know,
I mean, I definitely didn't know I could do it, but, well, you know, my job since I was 16 was in the service industry. And I was always kind of struggling to like, well, what is it that I, you know, it's like, I wanted to do music. Like my goal was to, you know, be able to have the music somehow support me in some way. And, you know, I never could see myself doing anything else. So, you know, the thing to make money was like being the bartender, being the waitress, the thing that I didn't have to like be completely engaged in, and then I could do music on, you know, as well. And so I did that for a really long time. I was teaching, like people, you know, over the years were like, oh, can you teach, you know, guitar, da, da, da. So I kind of like dabbled in like teaching, and I had some students and worked at a handful of places. And then really it was connecting with Inside Out when Blair had said, come in and help me with this workshop, you know. And I did, and it was so exciting. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I can do this. And when they reached out, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I was terrified, and but I got better at it. And then I had this opportunity with Living Arts when another friend of mine, her mother had passed away or wasn't doing well. And she said, well, I heard that you can do this. Will you take over this residency? So I did. And, you know, it's like 7 years later, Living Arts has now trained me, put me through lots of professional development. They really like have believed in me. And I will say that I was kind of a natural. Like when I walked in, I was able to sort of disarm the teachers right away, like with my spirit and my lightness. And, you know, it's a hard thing for a teacher to have somebody walk into a classroom and say, I'm gonna show you something.
Right.
You know, especially in Detroit where it's like, you know, that there's such a challenged school system, and the teachers are overworked and underpaid. And so here you're this like, you know, musician, I'm going to come in here and teach you. And I'm like,
show you how it's done. Right.
Right. And so but I was able to, with humility, like come into these classrooms and really charm the teachers. And I was a natural at connecting music. It just happened. I was really good at it. And so once I went through some trainings, I have, you know, emerged as one of their leading teaching artists, which is really awesome and exciting. And so they've put a lot of energy into me. and so now so 6 years ago, I quit my last bartending job. So,
wow.
And I have not had to go back, and music and teaching has become a way, you know, to sustain. So these organizations are really important because they do employ artists, and artists need to, you know, I think in many multiple ways. I mean, we're in that kind of world where everybody's got to kind of think like, what are three or four things I can do to make money?
Exactly.
You know,
right.
And so I'm hustling, I'm all over the city. I'm here and there, and working on a new project too. I've been given a house to steward over to help.
I saw that. That sounds so exciting. I was going to ask you about that. Tell me how that even came about.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something you touched on earlier in the introduction. It's like, I've been doing it for a long time, and I've had a lot of wonderful, I've made a lot of wonderful connections in the city of Detroit and around the area by being consistent, showing up, and really investing my heart into the work. So this house, a couple of years ago, the person, this foundation, the Chalfont Foundation, and it's connected to CADE, which is an art gallery in Detroit. And the director of that had reached out and said, hey, I've got this house. We have a few different houses that they had kind of bought on auction. And they're actually doing a really beautiful thing. Some of the families that were being evicted and losing their house, the organization bought and gave them back at cost the houses to keep them in the neighborhood. This is in the Northwest Goldberg neighborhood, which is one of the hardest hit, you know, the poorest areas in Detroit. And so this particular house, he said, Audra, I've got this house, and I know you've been wanting to do this music program. And like, because I've been wanting, you know, I used to do dinner and a show at this house in Woodbridge, and we had this monthly series where I would play, but we'd also bring in an artist from somewhere else in the country and or in Detroit and feature them. We'd kind of do potluck style. It was very community oriented and all that. I've been wanting to find a space to do that, but I also want to find a space to live. I've been renting in the city. I was born in the city. I've been renting in the city like since I could rent. And I wanted a space that I could really put my energy into. So they gave me this house under the guise of that I could transform the first floor into a performance space / music, a place for music lessons for the community. I really want to raise the focus on the Northwest Goldberg community and sort of model for other people in the community how we don't have to, one place isn't going to save our city. Like right. Every community, every little neighborhood could have a place like this. So DHOM, which we call it, it's really Detroit House of Music, for no other reason that I couldn't, for the paperwork for filling out for a grant, I didn't have a name in mind. And I thought, well, it's a little pretentious in a way, but I was like, I just need it for this grant. But then it kind of stuck. So
yeah,
Detroit
House
good.
Of
Music,
it's wonderful.
Is going to be, yes, like a performance space for the community to come together. There's going to be a lesson room, like I said, really razor focused on giving free lessons to the community right there within the five blocks, as well as lessons for people that want to come and pay money that are outside that area. And we're creating a music library where it's a lesson to own format, so that we're going to take donations for instruments and we're going to have them fixed up and get them ready for little ones and young people and old people too, all people,
all
bodies. to come. And if they're committed and they take, you know, a certain amount of lessons, that they can lesson to own the instrument. And because we want to put these instruments, there's instruments all over the city. They're in the bottom, you know, in class, in schools, locked up in rooms, and they're in people's attics. And I want a way to say, like, hey, we can recycle these instruments. We can get these instruments in people's hands that will love them and care for them. And all they have to do is show that they're committed to learning. So we will have a music library. And that's kind of the first step. And then I also, the second floor will be come three separate living spaces, one for a long-term artist that I hope would be there to help with programming, putting on shows, putting on events, and also to give lessons as a part of their rent, and then have an artist in residence that could do shorter time. And then also like almost an artist Airbnb, so that one of the rooms is always kind of open for, hey, somebody's here for the weekend and we want to, you know, offer this space for them. And then I would be living there too. So
Audra, that is
a big,
so beautiful.
Project. It's very overwhelming.
I know, but as you talk about it, the passion behind your voice is incredible. So we have to wrap up, but I want, if people are interested in either donating or supporting what you're doing, or even just, you know, want to hear your music too, what's the best way to find Audra Kubot?
Yeah, okay, so I have AudraKubotMusic.com is my website. But my Facebook page, Audra Kubot, Facebook page, my music page, I do a lot of updates there. We will be doing outreach and fundraising for DHOM. I did get a $10,000 grant so far.
Congratulations.
So Detroit House of Music also has a Facebook page, so you can go and like that there, and then you'll get updates and photographs. And we're doing this beautiful Victorian house that was built in 1894, and so we're rehabbing that. But if you just Google Audra Kubot, you will find something on me. And
Well, you are so impressive and inspiring, and this is the type of thing I always want to dream big. Is, you know, we never know where we can make a difference, but if we just keep moving forward and using what we have to do so, and that's what you have done. And I'm proud to know you. And thanks so much for being on my show. I greatly appreciate it. Thanks, all you Dream Big listeners. Keep dreaming big.